If I shot a 400-inch bull, I'd probably be a fan of that cartridge for the rest of my life, no matter what it was.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, welcome to the Hunt Backcountry podcast, presented by Exo Mountain Gear. This podcast and the gear that we produce at Exo Mountain Gear share the same purpose: to make you a more capable, confident, and successful backcountry hunter. Straight to the point, no fluff, and no BS. This show is all about providing you with valuable information from experienced hunters. In this episode, episode 69, we dive into our Building a Backcountry Rifle series and discuss the topic of caliber or cartridge selection. So first things first, when you go to build or buy a new rifle, is what caliber do you want? What caliber do you need? All kinds of variables come into play, from the type of game that you'll be hunting, to the terrain that you're hunting in, and so much more. We discuss these variables today with our guest, and also break down some of the top performing, do-it-all, big game hunting cartridges. Before we dive into the show, I want to give a shout out to Jeremy Mahan for leaving us a review on iTunes. Jeremy, for that review, we want to send you some Exo Mountain Gear swag, and thank you for leaving that review. Listeners, if you want to enter into future giveaways, it's really simple. Just consider leaving us a review on iTunes or wherever else you might be listening to this, or contact us with your questions, comments, or feedback by emailing us at podcast@exomountaingear.com. Well, Joseph, welcome to the show. How are you doing tonight?
I'm well, thank you. It's been a beautiful snowy day in central Utah. I did a little bit of shooting, rang some 1,000-yard targets, so life is good.
Nice. That sounds like a good day. Steve, you're on the line as well. How are you doing tonight, buddy?
Yeah, man, fantastic. Just a regular old, what is it, Tuesday? Just go to work, go home, record a podcast here.
Living the life, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, just to get us started, Joseph, if you could give us, obviously, our listeners some context for those who aren't familiar with you, and give us some of your hunting and professional background, and obviously there's some overlap there as well, but introduce us to yourself and what you do, and why we're talking to you today about caliber selection.
You bet. Currently, I write full-time for Peterson's Hunting Magazine, Shooting Times Magazine, Rifle Shooter Magazine, and a couple of others. My background, I started shooting, hunting, shooting competitively and doing some part-time gunsmithing in my teens, and just eventually developed a real love for firearms and cartridges and for putting them to real-world use. I guided big game hunter professionally for about 9 years in Montana and southern Utah. Put myself partway through school doing that. Started just writing articles. I studied creative writing in college and thought I wanted to be a novelist, but started publishing a few magazine articles while in college, and one thing led to another, and here I am doing it full-time and loving the life I live.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, I'm a blessed man. I mean, deadlines are deadlines, and a job's a job no matter what you do, but I'm lucky enough to make a living doing what I love. So yeah. As far as my background in rifles and cartridges, I mean, it's just been, a lifelong area of study and enthusiasm. I really enjoy working up hand loads with various cartridges, various projectiles for real world use, whether it's, competing in long range precision rifle matches or hunting with them, wherever the case may be. I've done a lot of hunting with various types of projectiles and cartridges and so forth, ranging from, traditional flintlock muzzle loaders up through some pretty cutting edge modern stuff. So I don't know if I'm the ultimate authority, but I love the subject, so I enjoy talking about it.
Yeah, well, we're glad that you're here to do that with us and share some knowledge. I guess, you kind of mentioned just in that last couple sentences there about flintlock all the way to the modern and the cutting edge. And obviously with the work that you're in, you clearly have an opportunity to check out the latest and greatest. You know, just my context, you know, grown up hunting with firearms and have done most of my big game hunting with a bow, but you know, I have experience with the standards, if you will, 270s, 30-06, and sort of those standard calibers. And I'm sort of amazed as I'm getting more up to speed of how many offerings there really are on the market. Could you just kind of, I know this is a big question, but sort of give us a little bit of a history, some of the trends about, you know, moving from things like the 30-06, which is obviously over 100 years old now, but still somewhat relevant. And then, you know, there's all these latest and greatest calibers and cartridges that are seemingly expanding all the time. What are the efficiencies and performance gains that are being chased with these newer calibers?
That is a pretty broad question, and we'll probably tack it from several angles here. Sorry, there goes my phone. The 30-06, of course, was instrumental in setting the foundation for a whole new way of looking at cartridge performance. The soldiers that came back from World War II had learned that they could effectively shoot 600 yards and farther, which, you know, with the old 94 Winchester lever action 30-30s that most of them, or many of them, had grown up with, was simply impossible. And I think kind of, it's interesting that you mentioned the 30-06, because while it's a classic, it also started the trend that continues today, and if anything, has more momentum and steam today than I think it ever has. And that's in precision shooting and increasing your effective range. And it seems like it's a fever that's caught shooters across the broad spectrum of riflemanship, all the way from guys that just enjoy ringing steel at 1,200 yards, through hunters that are either wanting to be able to make very, very precise shots at 300 yards, or, you know, in some cases, whether your ethics agree with it or not, guys are shooting big game at previously unheard of distances out to 1,000 yards and sometimes more. It's hard to really say, you know, to attribute the driving, what's driving this trend to any one emotion or desire among hunters, but in cartridges specifically, it seems as if efficiency is combining with really cutting edge cartridge design and modern projectiles that have better aerodynamics than ever before. Which, well, the way I look at it is today's 400 yards is now 600 yards. Even just 20, 25, 30 years ago, really before the advent of really capable long distance range finders, a rifleman that could consistently drop a deer at 400 yards was exceptional. Today, that same rifleman can consistently drop a deer at 600 yards. And there's a lot of ethics that come into it. I hope we have a chance to discuss that a little bit too. But to do that, to be effective and ethical at 600 yards and even a bit further, there are a lot of things that come into play. But primarily, you've got to deliver your projectile to your target with, one, enough velocity to expand that projectile, and two, enough energy to effectively kill that animal. And in order to do that, you've got to drive it fast enough. The trade-off is typically when you shoot a bullet really fast, you're going to wear out your barrel quickly. And today's hunters that are gaining these proficiencies typically are shooting a lot. I think today's shooters put a lot more rounds downrange than your typical hunter did, at least here in the wide open West where I live, and these trends are so strong. And so a lot of the guys want a cartridge that they can look down the road with, where they're not thinking, okay, well, you know, I'm shooting a box practicing and two or three shots a game each year. I don't need a barrel that will go 3,000 rounds. A barrel that will go 600 rounds is fine. So I'm going to get that 7mm Ultra Mag and drive those bullets just as fast as I can. Instead, I think a lot of shooters are trending toward cartridges like the 6.5 Creedmoor and the 280 Ackley Improved and the 7mm Short Action Ultra Magnum, which are all very efficient cartridges, and you can get 2,500, 3,000, sometimes as many as 5,000 rounds through a rifle if you take care of it. And that enables these hunters to develop a greater proficiency than they would if they were shooting in cartridges that burned up their barrel quickly.
Yeah, that's helpful. I mean, it's interesting. You know, again, I'm a hunter, not a shooter. Not in depth knowledge on all these calibers, but it seems to me, from a sort of an outsider's perspective, there was a trend, at least for a while, to go with the biggest, baddest, fastest cartridge. Which, as you said, there are some disadvantages to barrel life being one of them. Obviously, just cost can be another factor for guys. The pounding of the shooting can be a factor. Guys simply can't put as many rounds down range with these calibers. And so what you're saying with some of these other cartridges, like the 6.5 Creedmoor, is you're still gaining efficiencies, but you don't have some of those downsides. They are more shootable, if you will. They do have longer barrel life, things of that nature. Is that what you were getting at there?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's not to say that those hot rod cartridges are a thing of the past. They really aren't. It's just that they're guys trying to extend their effective range are not leaning on them as heavily, because they don't, since you have a good range finder, you don't need to know, you don't need a cartridge that shoots as extremely excessively flat as something like, you know, a 257 Weatherby, which used to be an extraordinarily popular antelope and wide open mule deer country gun, because if you made an error in range estimation and you were 50 or 75, even 100 yards off, that short-term flat trajectory made a big difference, and it might save you from a miss or worse, a wounded animal. The reason I say short-term trajectory is because cartridges like, well, the 257 Weatherby, since we started with that, typically shot lighter bullets very, very fast, but those bullets weren't really aerodynamic. Since they were started so fast, they shot very flat to 350, 400, even 500 yards, but then they start dropping quickly because they've lost so much speed. Today, shooters tend to pick a sleek aerodynamic projectile that holds on to velocity better, and they don't have to start it as fast. So they're not, like you say, they're not getting the pounding on their shoulder, and they're not wearing the barrel out and so forth. Cost isn't as prohibitive. But those cartridges aren't gone. I mean, the fact that Weatherby just announced the fastest factory 6.5 cartridge available, the fastest that's ever existed, and it's 6.5 300 Weatherby, speaks to that. You know, that cartridge has already got a small bit of a cult following. If you're a Weatherby guy, you got to have one. And it's amazing. You know, it's pushing 130 grain bullets at 3,500 feet per second. That's almost up to 22-250 speeds, yet you've got a lot better aerodynamics in your bullet. So a lot of performance, short barrel life, but a lot of performance.
Yeah. So for our listeners out there, excuse me, help us think through, you know, there's these specialty cartridges. You mentioned something, obviously, you know, super fast, super flat shooting can be helpful for open country, antelope, mule deer, where these longer shots are possible. And so you have like a specialty selection based on that hunting scenario. But there's other guys who just want to hunt pretty much anything and everything. They don't want to spend weeks and months dialing in different rifles or dialing in different loads. They just want to hunt. So they're less of the shooter, more of the hunter. And so they might go with more of a general purpose caliber, if you will. So when should a hunter lean one way or the other, chasing something that's specialized for a given purpose versus finding something that's more effective on a general purpose but might make some concessions and not be the most ideal in all circumstances?
Sure. I think it depends a lot on your passions and your hobby and where you're approaching from. And I've got an example I can give here that actually showcases this perfectly. I've got two really good buddies that are both neighbors of mine. Both are hunters, both are shooters. However, one lives to hunt, the other lives to shoot, and they cross over in the middle. Both are currently building or assembling the parts to have a really fine custom gunsmith build a new hunting rifle. They're both going to be premium hunting rifles. The shooter is choosing a specialized cartridge, and the hunter is choosing something that's more available on a broad spectrum, and we've had some long conversations about this. So my buddy Wes Hogan is the serious hunter, and he's one of the best I've ever met. He's also a very good shooter. But after some long discussions, he settled on going with the 7mm Remington Magnum simply because it's a high-performance cartridge that doesn't beat you up, and ammunition is available in just about every corner gas station in every podunk town in Western America, right? And it's got enough authority for game up to and including moose, yet it's not overpowered for, you know, especially with a decent muzzle brake for somebody like his wife to shoot. My other buddy, on the other hand, Ty Evans, he's a serious shooter. He's working on finishing up his gunsmithing certificate currently, and he's building a 280 Ackley Improved just because he loves the study of the cartridges and working with a high efficiency specialty cartridge to milk the best performance he can get out of it. The interesting thing is, in the final analysis, these guys are going to be shooting similar bullets, same diameter, similar weights, maybe even the same weight, within 50 to 75 feet per second of each other and getting almost identical downrange performance. But they're coming from very different backgrounds. The one guy is choosing a cartridge that's easily available. The other one is choosing a specialty cartridge, and they're both getting the performance they need. So as far as when to choose something that's a good broad spectrum cartridge, I think that's anytime you may be limited in your financial budget and you just aren't going to be able to purchase four or five different hunting rifles. So you can pick and choose, you know, the perfect one for the task. And I think you don't have to, you know, there are a lot of guys, there's an old saying, beware of the one rifle hunter, because he's going to be very, very proficient with his tool. And if you want to shoot a .30-06, as long as it's a good, accurate one and it's reliable, the more power to you. Western hunters have been effectively using that cartridge to a quarter mile or even a bit more for, like you said earlier, over a century now. Another really good one is the 7mm Remington Magnum. Another is the 300 Winchester Magnum. Those three are probably my top three choices for a do-everything Western big game cartridge.
We want to take just a minute to thank Weatherby for making this series possible. When Steve and I were shopping for rifles, we reached out to Weatherby and asked if they would be willing to partner with us and help bring you guys this series, and they were more than happy to do that. So thank you, Weatherby. One thing that stands out from these Vanguard S2 backcountry rifles that Steve and I have been shooting, and this stood out right from the moment I got the rifle out of the box to my first range trip to all the continued shooting that I've done, is the trigger. It's light and crisp, and it's a two-stage trigger. Now, I've spent aftermarket money dropping triggers in other rifles I've owned in the past. This Weatherby factory trigger rivals those and even exceeds some of the aftermarket triggers that I've used and purchased myself. It's adjustable, but I haven't even needed to adjust it. It's just a great feeling trigger. If you guys want to learn more about the Weatherby series of Vanguard rifles, in particular the backcountry, be sure that you check out weatherby.com. All right, let's get back into the show and continue discussing caliber and cartridge selection. you know, there's an investment of money and time on the specialized side. And I would assume, and this obviously goes hand in hand with off-the-shelf ammo availability, that if you're not going to be reloading, that it makes more sense for most guys to go with more of a standard cartridge. That way they're able to easily find factory ammo.
Yeah, that can have a big effect on the cartridge you choose. Sometimes, though, you get a lot more performance, whether it's accuracy or downrange terminal performance, or both, through hand loading, even if you're shooting on, you know, one of the most common cartridges there is. So, you know, for hunters that are looking at getting into Western big game hunting and really want to get the most out of their chosen caliber, whatever that may be, I'd never write reloading off, even if it's, you know, looked at as a future desire. As far as the specialty stuff, interestingly, and maybe because it's kind of a specialty cartridge and not as common, and it's marketed for a high performance demographic of shooters, typically the factory ammunition you can get, while your selection isn't as broad, what you can get is very good stuff. For instance, the 6.5 Creedmoor we mentioned earlier, there are a handful of very good hunting loads out there. Probably my favorite currently for that cartridge is Hornady's Precision Hunter factory ammunition, which shoots 143 grain ELDX bullet, which is really, if you're rifleman enough, it's enough bullet to take game cleanly well past 600 yards. My niece has shot, she's 13. Yeah, she's 13 this fall, and she shot two elk with it, a cow elk on a depredation permit, and then a spike bull on Utah spike elk hunt. And it works well. It's not going to knock an elk wobbly like a, you know, a 300 caliber or bigger will, but elk are tough and they're hard to put down with one shot no matter what you're shooting. You know, another good example would be the 280 Ackley Improved. Nosler has some great factory ammunition for it. It is hard to find, but when you do find it, it's pretty high performance stuff.
Okay. Yeah, that's helpful. Could we go back to Joseph? Just, I'm sure some listeners' ears sort of peaked up as you mentioned the 30-06, the 7mm rim mag, and what was the other one you mentioned as sort of your top three for a do-it-all cartridge?
The 300 Winchester mag.
Okay, 300 Win mag. Okay. Could we kind of talk a bit about the three of those for a bit, and can you make some comparisons there for the guys who heard that and are super interested in the do-it-all cartridge and want to learn more about, you know, why you picked those three, and then maybe some of the pros and cons of each of those three?
You bet. And towards the end of that discussion, we could throw in a couple of contenders, other cartridges that could be considered, but maybe just aren't quite there with the top three.
That'd be great.
And if I ramble on, don't be afraid to jump in and steer me back onto the straight and narrow here.
No, we're ready to soak this up.
Okay. So for me, living in the Rocky Mountain West and having hunted from Alaska down through Mexico, a do-everything cartridge has to be around that fits several different criteria. It's got to be cleanly capable, ethically capable of taking the biggest game that I anticipate hunting with it. Now I'm talking hoofed game here and possibly black bears. The big bears in the West are a different matter entirely, and when you hunt them, you do need a specialty cartridge, something big. So that's why I've left out certain cartridges, such as the 270 Winchester, which I grew up hunting and I dearly love it. It's just on the edge of being adequate for moose and even elk. You've got to really choose your projectile carefully when you're hunting elk with a 270. So the 30 calibers and the 7mm have a very broad selection of available bullets. And that's in factory ammunition as well as component bullets that you can reload. They also both calibers. So the three we mentioned, 7 Rem Mag, 30-06, and 300 Win Mag, there's 1.7mm and 230 calibers in our little top three here. Both of those calibers tend to perform very well with heavy 4 caliber projectiles. So instead of shooting 150 grain 30-06 tail guys would choose, I always opt for 180 grain minimum. And sometimes for a 200 grain bullet, like Nosler's 200 grain Accubond or Hornady's 200 grain ELDX bullets, both very good choices. A heavy for caliber bullet gives you better penetration and carries a little more energy to the target, bucks the wind better, and so forth. That's a whole different discussion. But the point is, these cartridges are all, they excel with those heavy bullets, which makes them, that's a big part of what makes them really good for elk and for moose. At the same time, all three of these cartridges drive projectiles pretty fast. So if you want to back off, if you're not a big electronics guy, you don't want to carry a range finder, you'd prefer to estimate range, you know, make your best call and take a shot in the field, you can still back off and drive a lighter bullet, 140 grain 7mm bullet, or 150 or 165 grain 30 caliber bullet. You can drive them fast enough that they have a pretty forgiving flat trajectory up close. Another critical element that all three of these cartridges provide is they deliver quite a lot of terminal authority. And that can be really important. In the West, opportunities often come dear. You work hard for them. And whether it's a big northern whitetail that's vanishing into a thicket 70 yards away and all you've got is a steeply raking shot through his hip and into the boiler room, or it's the biggest bull elk you've seen in your life standing on a ridge 450 yards away. You need to have a cartridge that will deliver enough terminal performance to ethically allow you to take that shot. So those three cartridges, they're readily available. A lot of ammunition out there for them. Factory loads galore. You can pick something that's going to provide the performance you need and that's accurate in your rifle. If you can't find something like that, you probably need to either sell the rifle or find a friend that's a very good shooter to help you pick that, because something's wrong there. There's enough very good ammunition types that you should be able to find something that shoots really well out of your gun and still offers that performance. If you're a hand loader, the possibilities are endless as far as projectiles. What else? It's nice to know that with all three of those, if you're flying out on a once-in-a-lifetime hunt and the airline screws up and lose your baggage, you can find ammunition for them. That's also important. As far as why those edge out other cartridges, I think it's just the balance. No matter what you're pursuing, whether it's a pronghorn antelope on the plains of Wyoming or a moose in, you know, the boreal forest of Alaska, you've got enough without having too much. So they're very nicely balanced cartridges. Now, I'm a bit of a oddball cartridge lover, and given my preference, I'll hunt with something like a 300 Holland and Holland rather than a 300 Winchester Magnum, just because I love the unique. That said, I think I've shot more bull elk with a 300 Winchester Magnum than any other cartridge. And if I had to rate one at the top for all types of Western hunting, including moose, I would choose the 300 Winchester Magnum. If moose wasn't on the agenda, I might opt for the 7mm Rem Mag. But the 300 Winchester Magnum, I've got a soft spot in my heart for it purely because I've had such good luck with it on game. It hits hard. It's not finicky. And I've learned to trust it. A year and a half ago, I drew a tag here in Utah that I'd been putting in for most of my adult life and pulled a limited, what we call a limited entry tag. It's basically a special lottery tag that you build points toward. The longer you put in for it, the higher your chance of drawing it. But it's, geez, I think I've been putting in 17 years and I still beat, I think, something like 11-1 odds to draw the tag. And public land hunt. I went hunted with my twin brother and my good buddy Wes Hogan that I mentioned earlier. Non-guided hunt. I grew up down on the unit that I drew, so I knew it real well. And I ended up finding a bull that we had a few pictures of, trail camera pictures, and made a really lucky shot on him at 70 yards and dropped him, just knocked him flat with a 300 Winchester Magnum. And he scored officially 402 gross.
Wow.
So he's just a tremendous bull. Probably the best animal I'll shoot in my life.
If I shot a 400-inch bull, I'd probably be a fan of that cartridge for the rest of my life, no matter what it was.
Yeah, no doubt. This one, the rifle is a Kimber 8400 with a really nice walnut stock that I had a custom barrel put on. And then Doug Turnbull, who's a specialist restoration expert of Winchester firearms and does a lot of British side-by-sides and so forth too. Color case hardened the action and the bottom metal and so forth, and refinished the stock with Winchester's original French red finish and so forth. And it's just a fantastically beautiful rifle. I took that to Africa the year before, to Namibia on a free range hunt, and made 13 one-shot kills with that rifle over there. So that, I mean, that also, you do something like that, that tends to solidify your faith in your cartridge as well.
Yeah, absolutely. What's short mags? And I almost bought like a rifle a few years ago that was a 300 WSM. What's the difference there? I don't even know. A buddy just said, you know, that's the one I would buy if I was me. So
sure. They have certain advantages and some very tangible disadvantages. So what a short magnum is, it's a very fat case that's short enough to fit in a short action rifle. So those who promote short action rifles say, well, you have a faster response time because your bolt travel is shorter. Right. So it takes less time to rack your bolt all the way back and put a fresh cartridge in. Also, excuse me. Since your action is shorter, it's stiffer and it vibrates less, which on theoretical terms promotes accuracy. Also, with a short cartridge, a shorter, broader column of powder inside, you theoretically should have a more consistent, more efficient powder burn. So you can use a little less powder in a shorter, fatter column of powder and get about the same performance as you do with a long, skinny powder, a column of powder that has to burn basically from the rear forward where the primer ignites it. So the short magnums were extremely popular for several years, about, 12 or 15 years ago when they came out. And one in particular, the 300 Winchester Short Magnum, is still pretty popular, and it's a great cartridge. The reason that they kind of fell by the wayside as a group is that they're hard to make feed smoothly and reliably in a bolt-action rifle. Basically, the shorter the cartridge and the fatter it is, the steeper the angle that it has to achieve coming out of your magazine box and then basically rattling forward and up and centering itself and diving into your chamber. And a lot of rifle manufacturers found that their bolt action just didn't play nice with short, fat cartridges. The magnums that we currently have, most of the belted ones, and then the long magnums such as Remington's 300 Ultra Mag and 7mm Ultra Mag and so forth, are a little smaller in diameter and a little longer And practical experience pretty well showed rifle manufacturers that that was about as fat and short as you could go without adopting a bunch of inherent potential issues. Now, certain rifle actions handle them pretty well. Winchester was the one that introduced those cartridges. And the Model 70 does pretty well with the short magnums. And with appropriate gunsmithing, most actions can be made to feed them well. But it is an extra headache, and sometimes a very, very large extra headache. So they kind of fell by the wayside. I had a beautifully accurate custom rifle on loan for a couple of articles last year in 7mm Winchester Short Magnum, WSM. And I was given the choice of what cartridge I wanted to try, and so I asked what they had on their shelves, and that one caught my ear. They said they'd had this company, the rifle company, said they'd had it for about 5 months and hadn't been able to sell it. I said, well, I'd like to try that cartridge, so let's give it a shot. And that rifle, it was a by Fierce Firearms in Gunnison, Utah. It was absolutely a half-minute gun, very accurate, but it was finicky. I had to do a lot of hand load development to find that perfect load. But worse than that, it took me weeks to find any brass to start reloading. And not a store, even the big box stores in the area, didn't carry ammunition. So that's a disadvantage to some of the short magnums, especially if you're, you know, if you find a used rifle that's just a great deal, and let's say a really nice Ruger Model 77 or something for $300. You may not want to buy it without researching whether or not you can get ammunition first. So that's kind of where the short magnums come in. Now, there are a couple that are worth considering. If you're shopping for a big game rifle, a 300 Winchester short magnum is probably the best of the lot, purely because it's pretty popular and pretty available. You won't be able to hand load it to the same performance as a 300 Win Mag, but in factory ammunition, the two are, for practical purposes, they're ballistic twins.
Okay.
Another one that's experienced a comeback is the Remington Short Action Ultra Magnum. And it really occurred because a few years back, somebody won the 1,000-yard championships at Camp Perry with a 7mm Remington Short Action Ultra Magnum. And so there was quite a stir of excitement among a bunch of the, you know, the precision-minded guys, and that's a pretty good cartridge.
That's good. So, can we touch base on the three we mentioned as well? And I'd like to talk a little bit more just about comparing them to one another. I mean, as you mentioned, they're all great choices, but even within those three, what are some of the factors to consider that could help our listeners who are maybe on the fence about deciding among one of those three? I mean, just in looking at it, I see some noticeable differences just among recoil when you talk about the 300 Win Mag down to like a 30-06, for example. And for the guys who, you know, aren't shooting a rifle for a living and who are willing to admit that we're all not macho and can handle anything and everything, I mean, guys do develop flinches. And so I've seen it with guys with the 300 Win Mag who, you know, who think they're fine, but they put more than a couple rounds down range and they start getting some issues. So is recoil one of those differences to consider? And what are some of the other attributes to consider among those three that might help a guy make a better decision?
Sure. Recoil definitely is a factor. A lot of that can be mitigated by rifle design. And if you're willing to carry a pair of earmuffs with you while you're in the field, by all means, put a brake on your muzzle. That'll make your 300 Winchester Magnum shoot about like a 270 or even softer. So there are ways around it. But purely in terms of cartridge performance, when we compare those top three, the 7 Rem Mag, the 30-06, and the 300 Winchester Magnum, each have some specific advantages and a few disadvantages. Now, they're also all really well-balanced cartridges, and that's why they kind of make my top three. So these differences are going to to be a little, how shall I put this? They're pretty specific and not necessarily very important. But let's start with the 30-06 since it's the oldest. And to this day, still probably the most popular big game cartridge in existence in America, possibly worldwide. It, without doubt, is the best option for a hunter that doesn't want a lot of fuss, a lot of muss, doesn't want to practice a ton, doesn't like recoil, and doesn't really plan to shoot anything past 300 yards. Inside of 300 yards, the 30-06 is absolutely fantastic on just darn near any hoofed game you'd like to hunt in North America. Past there, the only reason that the 7 Rem Mag and the 301 Mag edge it out is because they start their projectiles faster and they carry energy a little further as a result. Also, you can shoot a little heavier bullet faster, which can make a big difference. We'll get to that in a minute. The 30-06 has the advantage of much less expensive ammunition. You can go into Walmart and buy a pretty good high-performance box of, my choice would probably be a Remington 180-grain core-locked bullet. It's probably going to be accurate in your rifle. It will perform well on game. And it's probably not going to cost you more than about $20. Also, you have the lesser recoil. Of the three cartridges, the 30-06 definitely will recoil less, probably 20 to 30% less than the 300. Another advantage is that it performs well out of a shorter barrel, so you can carry a 22 or 24 inch barrel and be just fine, where with the Magnums, you really don't want to go shorter than a 24, and if you want to get the best out of it, you're probably going to shoot a 26 inch barrel. Additionally, most bolt actions will carry 4 or 5 30-06 cartridges because it's a slightly smaller diameter cartridge, as opposed to carrying 2 or 3 of the Magnum cartridges. So you've got more ammunition in reserve. We all hope that we can take whatever big game animal we're shooting with one shot. But none of us are perfect, and we can never foresee everything that happens in the field. So it just isn't a bad thing to have extra rounds on tap, right? So those are a couple of the great advantages of the 30-06. Another in-factory ammo, you've got, if you're willing to search for it, you can find just about any projectile that you want to shoot, which gives you the option of tailoring your load to the game you hunt. Reloading it is easy. It's a forgiving cartridge to reload and inexpensive. It doesn't burn as much powder as the bigger cartridges. On the downside, all the 30-06 gives up is velocity. So let's tie in some distant performance here, because really when we're talking the difference between Western big game cartridges and Eastern big game cartridges, distance is one of the primary dividers, and game size is another, although you can count in some of the moose up in Maine and so forth, and you're right back there among big hoofed game. But let's focus on distance for a minute. The 30-06 in the hands of a very capable rifleman with correct projectile choice is good to about, we'll call it a quarter mile, 440, 450 yards. And a very accomplished rifleman can ethically kill past that, but you've really got to know your stuff. The 30-06 is most at home inside 300, maybe 350 yards. So that's probably its only weakness, is that it's not great past 300 yards. Inside of that, it's absolutely fabulous. Let's move to the 7mm Remington Magnum now, which is the smaller bore diameter, but it shoots a projectile faster. If you're shooting, let's say, 160 grain bullets and lower, you really don't gain a whole lot on the 30-06 except a little bit of speed. If you're willing to shoot one of the long aerodynamic 160 to 175 grain bullets, maybe even a 180 grain bullet, now you start gaining some real, real serious downrange ability. Because the 7 millimeter diameter, which is 0.284 in terms of decimal inches, is inherently aerodynamic. So you can get very high BCs, ballistic coefficients, with these bullets. And if you push them fast enough, you get minimal wind drift, minimal bullet drop, and maximum energy retention downrange. And whether you're shooting 200 yards or 600 yards, energy retention is important. And best of all, you get it in a cartridge that doesn't kick a whole bunch harder than a 30-06, assuming comparable rifle weights and stock designs. Ammunition is going to cost more. You're looking at cheap stuff's probably going to be $25 if you're really lucky and find some garbage on sale. The good stuff starts at about $35 and can go up to 60 or 70 for a box of 20 cartridges. So it's more expensive to shoot. It does have more recoil. To get the best out of it, you've got to carry a 24 or 26 inch barreled rifle, like I mentioned earlier. Barrel life, you're probably looking 1,500 to 2,000 rounds, depending on how careful you are about letting it get too hot at the range while you're shooting. Back to the 30-06, it's got lots of barrel life. Even if you abuse it, you're probably going to get 3,000 or 4,000 rounds. And if you're careful with it, probably upwards of 5,000. Big difference there. So another thing that the 7mm diameter cartridge has is sectional density. It's a penetrator. So you can, you know, you've got a broad selection of bullets. And again, this isn't really a discussion on bullets, but it ties in with the reason so powerfully, with the reason that the 7mm Remington Magnum is so good. Now, I got to add a caveat and a word of caution here, because the 7mm Remington Magnum for most of its life, really till the past, let's call it a couple of decades, had a reputation for being a wounder, not a fast killer. The main reason was poor projectile choices. A lot of manufacturers, ammunition manufacturers, loaded bullets designed for slower cartridges, specifically the 7mm by 57 Mauser, which is designed to, I mean, it shoots bullets at 2,400 to 2,700 feet per second. Excuse me. So you take that 20, you know, so let's call it 140 grain bullet designed for the 7x57 and now drive it at 3,200 feet per second. On impact, it's going to act a lot like a varmint bullet and fragment basically to nothing, giving you a very dramatic but very shallow wound channel. So the 7mm gained a reputation among a lot of Western hunters and guides for knocking game down that then got up and ran away, never to be found again. It really wasn't the fault of the cartridge, but unfortunately, it did gain that reputation. However, if you're willing to do your research and put in a tough bullet, such as a Nosler partition or a Swift A-frame, or one of my all-time favorite factory-only projectiles, Federal's trophy bonded tip bullet, the cartridge won't let you down. It'll penetrate like a depth charge and hit like a freight train and kill very, very efficiently. So that's the 7 Rem Mag. If we move on now to the 300 Winchester Magnum, its main disadvantage is recoil. It's right on the cusp of what experienced shooters tolerate cheerfully. And if you have a very lightweight rifle, they're not even very cheerful about that. But if, you know, if you're somebody that doesn't shoot very often and you don't like getting your fillings loosened every time you go out to practice, you're better off with one of the other two cartridges. However, if you're willing to shoot the 300 Winchester Magnum and you're kind of recoil insensitive, meaning it doesn't really phase you, And you got to be honest with yourself here. You can't be macho about it. I'm like you mentioned earlier, I've met a lot of guys that shoot big guns and they say, kick doesn't bother me. And then they sit down and if you take a slow motion video of them, they clench their eyes shut and jerk the trigger as hard as they can when they shoot. You know, you're not going to get good killing performance that way just because you're not going to put the bullet where it counts. And no matter how big your bullet is, if it doesn't hit the right spot, it's not going to kill cleanly. So that's the disadvantage of the 300 Win Mag. Now, you can put a brake on it and tame that recoil, but believe me, you've got to learn to carry your protection and be willing to take the 3 seconds necessary to install that hearing protection before you pull the trigger, because, oh man, this is something I learned the hard way. Growing up as a kid, I did a lot of shooting, a lot of competitive shooting, a lot of training without hearing protection. And even at 22, every time that thing cracks, it causes irreparable damage. As you guys know, your hearing mechanism is one of the few parts on your body that does not heal. It doesn't regenerate. So once you've lost hearing, it never comes back. And a muzzle brake can cause enough damage in one shot that it's noticeable. By the end of the day, you're thinking, man, my ears ain't working like they should. I've experienced it. So muzzle brakes, they're great, with that one caveat. You got to be willing to put on hearing protection. And if you're hunting with a buddy or a guide, you got to be willing to force them to do it and wait for them if they're slow before you take your shot.
Do you feel like that's a risk worth taking, given hunting and sometimes needing to make a shot quickly?
I do, in certain cases. And there's another advantage to muzzle brakes. The kind of, it provides a tipping point. If it was pure recoil control for me, I wouldn't use brakes when I hunt. And on anything but the heavy kickers, I don't. Because I'm too recoil insensitive. I started to separate the cartilage in my clavicle one time testing a 458 lot elephant rifle, and it literally started tearing my collarbone from its socket. Even though I was shooting great groups, I went to the chiropractor and she said, "Hey, stop doing that." And ever since, recoil doesn't bother me too much mentally, but I'm approaching bona fide middle age now, and it does have a cumulative effect on your body. And I just told myself, look, you know, you got to start being practical about the cartridges you shoot. And if you want to shoot something good, by all means, put a dang brake on it. Another thing I've gone to shooting with a lot and hunting with when I can is a suppressor, because it accomplishes the same thing in terms of recoil control and protects your ears. So that's another discussion that's for another time, but they're a very worthy addition to hunting. In fact, you go places like Europe and so forth, there are hunting clubs that don't allow you to hunt if you don't have a suppressor. There are ranges where you're not allowed to shoot unless you have a suppressor. It's just considered the civilized and polite thing to do. Over there, you can walk in a hardware store and buy one. They're not NFA-controlled items like they are here in the States, but I digress. So back to the 300 Winchester Magnum, and let me touch one other reason to shoot a break, and that's to help you spot your own impact. So I do a lot of long-range competitive work. I try not to shoot animals at unreasonable ranges. My creed is to be the best shooter I can, the best rifleman I can, so I can make whatever shot I'm called on to take in the field. Yet to be the best hunter I can so that I never do have to make those excessively long shots. But my competitive background has shown me that if you have a good muzzle brake on your rifle and a correct prone position, even with a heavy recoil like a 300 Win Mag or whatnot, you can spot your own impacts as close as 300 or 400 yards. And that makes a big difference for follow-up shots.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the tipping point with me, is being able to keep the animal that I've just fired at in my scope through recoil. Not only do I have a better idea of where I hit, but if I need to make a fast follow-up shot, it's a lot easier if I'm not searching for that animal again in my scope because I lost it because the darn thing jumped off, off my day pack or whatnot when I fired. So
right.
That's another reason to have muzzle brake. But circling back to the 300 Win Mag, Ammunition cost is going to be very similar to that of a 7-rem mag. Recoil is heavier. Performance on game is better. Performance at extreme distance isn't quite as good as the 7-rem mag. On game, the 300 Winchester Magnum, just because I think because it has that larger frontal diameter than the 7-rem mag, it will almost always have a more noticeable effect on impact. Whether you're shooting a moose or an elk or a mule deer or an antelope, that animal is going to react more when that bullet impacts than it will with the 7mm. I've seen it time and again. Some of that depends on bullet choice, but assuming that you're shooting similar bullets of similar construction, it will hit an animal harder. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to kill it faster. It may knock it down a little more effectively. But big, tough Western big game animals don't get knocked down very often. Even mule deer, you know, they'll take a bullet and go a long ways. Mm-hmm. Even a really well-placed bullet. I saw a very big mule deer buck once shot at 150 yards with a 7-rem mag and 175 grain nozzle partition. I mean, that's a tough bullet, heavy bullet, out of Magnum cartridge up fairly close, and the hunter put the bullet right through the center of the boiler room, destroyed both lungs, and that buck went about 160 yards through very rugged pinyon juniper and basaltic volcanic rock country before it dropped. I couldn't believe it. Animals are individual, a lot like people, and just like some guys will go down to a gentle poke to the nose, like me, and some guys, you can hit them with the head of the 2x4 and they just look at you. Animals are a lot like that. You know, when you shoot them, you can't trust that they're going to just tip over because you shoot them with a bigger gun. So what I'm saying is a 300 Win Mag doesn't necessarily kill more quickly than a 7-rem mag, but it over a lifetime of shooting animals with them, you'll notice that the 300 Win Mag hits very hard indeed. Also, it's pretty darn good at long range. 30 caliber bullets are pretty good aerodynamically. They're not quite there with the 7-rem mag. You have to go up there to a very heavy bullet, like a 220 grain bullet, to start achieving the same sort of aerodynamics, ballistic coefficients. But you can do it. Let me think. What other advantages and disadvantages? Really, the only disadvantages of the 300 Win Mag is the recoil, cost of ammunition, and then, of course, in some guns, you only have 2 rounds in the magazine. Most will carry 3 rounds in the magazine. So if you're willing to pause and top your chamber off from your magazine pouch or your cartridge pouch, your pocket, wherever you carry your extra cartridges, you've got 4 on tap. So you can get around that. Anyway, it's out of the three, like I mentioned earlier, the 300 Win Mag is kind of the nearest and dearest to my heart, although I've hunted with all three and will continue to do so with perfect faith in them.
Mm-hmm. Joseph, yeah, I mean, that's been very helpful information. You know, we could honestly talk, you know, another 20 episodes, another 200 hours. I mean, that's why... as you, of all people, know as a writer, there's always plenty to discuss on this topic. But just trying to narrow things down to some of the best do-it-all cartridges for Western big game hunting, and then giving some pros and cons, which we've accomplished tonight, has been an incredibly helpful discussion, not only for myself, I know, but just for our listeners, I'm sure, as well. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Yeah, I would love to go back just one more thing before we wrap up. It was something you mentioned in passing, and you know, anytime you talk about caliber selection and you don't mention somebody's favorite, they're going to get their feelings hurt. That's how it goes.
yeah, I know. Yeah.
Yeah. So you mentioned 270, and it was, you know, borderline compared to maybe some of the three that we mentioned. And just one aspect I want to touch on, and not the larger conversation, but you mentioned 270 for elk and being careful and particular and strategic about bullet selection when shooting 270 with elk. Could you elaborate on that and maybe just really quickly give some recommendations on a good bullet choice for those guys who are touting that 270 in the elk woods?
Absolutely. And for the guys that are doing that, no fear, they're well prepared as long as they're shooting, like I mentioned earlier, a well-chosen bullet. I grew up hunting with a pre-64 Model 70, chambered in 270 Winchester, and shot a lot of elk and some really nice mule deer with that rifle. And I had a pair of go-to hunting loads. I didn't shoot a big game animal with a factory cartridge until I was 29 years old. Because I was too poor, for one thing, to buy factory ammo, and because I just got better accuracy out of my hand loads. So I hunted deer with that 270 with 140 grain Sierra Game King bullet. It's a boat tailed lead tipped bullet, not cutting edge anymore, but they're very inherently accurate and they perform beautifully on deer sized game. I never shot it at an elk because I didn't feel like it was a tough enough bullet. When you go from a 200 to a 300 pound mule deer up to an elk, a big mature bull can go 800 plus. I've helped dress out and pack out bulls that I'm positive were between 1,000 and 1,100 pounds. Now, most aren't. In most regions, a very big mature bull will go 800 pounds, but the genetics in some areas just result in these massive body bulls, and they've got big bones. Dense muscle, broad rib cages. You need a bullet that will penetrate. It's got to expand as well. We don't want to be putting knitting needles through it, you know, holes through elk with a bullet that doesn't expand. But so my load for 270 for elk was 150 grain Combined Technologies Partition Gold. That's a bullet that's since been discontinued, but it was basically a partition with a black coating on it and a steel cup inside the rear of the jacket. That's a dual core jacket. You've got an H-shaped jacket with a lead core inserted from in front and one from rear. And that rear core had a steel cup around the front just to help prevent the shank of that bullet from deforming. I don't know that it was really a better projectile than the standard 150 grain Nosler partition, but it was good and it shot well in my gun, so I stuck with it. These days, I would just simply choose 150 grain partition and go with it if I wanted to use a partition. Other really good choices for elk and for moose would be a Barnes bullet, either a tipped triple shock or a standard triple shock bullet in the 140, 150, or 160 grain weight range. Barnes also loads factory ammunition called Vortex. That's some very, very good stuff. And they tend to be very accurate in rifles, a broad spectrum of rifles. So that's one of my first go-to choices when I'm searching for an accurate load in a new rifle. Another really good bullet, well, either of Swift's bullets. They make the A-frame, which is like a partition on steroids. It's bonded and has a thicker jacket. Not real high BC, so it's not good at long range, but their other bullet, Swift's other bullet, makes up for that. The Sirocco 2 is a bonded bullet, high BC, very tough. It's an outstanding bullet for broad spectrum Western use. In factory ammunition, you really can't go wrong with a Federal Trophy bonded tip bullet. Hornady bullets, I really like most of their stuff extremely well for deer, and the heavier bullets for elk in their standard cup and core, you know, lead core, copper jacket type things. When I'm going to something after something really tough, I tend to go to their GMX bullet, which is a homogeneous gilding metal bullet. So those are some really good choices for the bigger stuff, or if you want one load that you can hunt everything from moose down through deer. Now, if you think you're going to hunt mostly antelope and whitetails and mule deer with the occasional elk, a softer bullet might be in order, something like a Nosler ballistic tip, a Hornady SST, or something like that. That Sierra Game King that I mentioned is just outstanding. So those are some really good loads. In terms of the 270, bullet choice kind of allows you to step up or even step down a notch. So the way I look at it in cartridge selection. So if you want to hunt game that most guys would want a big magnum for, but you want to do it with your 270, just choose a tough bullet that's heavy for that diameter, that cartridge diameter. For instance, 160 grain Nosler partition or 150 grain Barnes triple shock, because you're going to get adequate expansion and very deep penetration, and that cartridge will kill a very heavy, tough animal more like a big magnum will when loaded with a tough bullet. So, yeah, I think that's about it. I mean, with that cartridge, gosh, I've hunted elk with it. I've never hunted moose or black bear with that cartridge, but I wouldn't hesitate to, as long as I had the right bullet, and as long as, you know, particularly with moose, I would be careful about my shot placement. I don't think I would take any steeply quartering shots. I'd wait for broadside shot with a 270 on moose.
Gotcha. Mm. Awesome. Well, good information again. Joseph, before we go.
Mark, go ahead, I'll cut you off. I just want, can you give the quick bullet points on why hand loading ammunition is more accurate? I've always heard that, and I don't, is it just simply because ammunition from the box store is mass produced and inherently maybe, you know, the grains of the powder are off, or what's the difference?
You know, that used to be the case more so than it is now, although you still see some of that in the budget loads where basically manufacturing inconsistencies affect the accuracy of the ammunition. But factory loads these days are better than ever by a long ways, and it's gotten harder and harder to outperform them with your hand loads, particularly in terms of gaining higher velocity or perhaps loading a better bullet for the job like we were just talking about. Just because there's such a broad spectrum of factory ammunition now, and with today's technologies and the electronics they employ in their loading assembly lines, they've gotten very consistent. Where you gain an edge in hand loading today, you may get a little bit of velocity and you're typically going to get some accuracy. Primarily, that's by tuning the powder charge to the harmonics of your rifle. So a rifle barrel hums like a darn tuning fork when that bullet goes down it. And I'm talking about while the bullet's traveling. If you ever watch any super slow speed video footage of a bullet with a, or a barrel with a bullet traveling down it, it goes like a spaghetti noodle. And so you want to try and tune your hand load so that your bullets are exiting the muzzle of your rifle in a natural pause. So think about whipping a rope where you've got, you know, a series of basically hills and valleys in that rope, and you're whipping it down. Every so often, the end of that rope will just pause right in between your fluctuations. Or think of a pendulum that swings from side to side. A barrel is, in essence, a three-dimensional pendulum, but it does pause. They call them nodes, barrel nodes, just like a pendulum pauses on each end of its swing. And if you can tune your powder charge so that your projectile exits your barrel during one of those pauses, those nodes, your group will tighten up dramatically. I've seen hand loads go from inch and a half groups to 3/4 inch groups over a 1/2 grain change. Now, of course, I'm not talking a granule of powder. Grain in terms of gunpowder is a measurement system. There are 7,000 grains per pound. Anyway, you can tune your bullet that way. You can tune your hand load that way so that you're shooting during the node. And then also you can tune your seating depth. And there, I mean, you can research how to do both of these. We don't have time to talk about
okay.
Your seating depth right now, but you can tune your seating depth as well so that the lead, it's called it, and the basically the entry point into your rifling benefits accuracy as well. Some bullet types like to be seated firmly against the rifling. Some like to jump up to a tenth of an inch. So just a little bit of knowledge about your bullet and how they typically like to be seated, and then playing with that in your rifle in 5/1000ths of an inch increments until you find the sweet spot can gain accuracy for you. So with me, when I get a new rifle, I'll try and find a factory load that shoots great through it, just because a lot of times I don't have time to reload and I need to grab factory ammo and go, right? But if I've got the time, right, I'll always then choose a bullet, typically a high-performance bullet, aerodynamic, well-built, deep penetrating. You know, those are characteristics that tell me I can use that bullet on just about any game as far as I feel comfortable shooting. And I'll take that bullet and develop a hand load for that specific rifle that gets the very best accuracy I possibly can out of it. It's not just beneficial in terms of performance, but it's also kind of therapeutic. And there's a great sense of accomplishment in hand loading your own ammunition and knowing that you're getting the very best out of your rifle and going and taking a big game animal with those loads that you've built.
Yeah, no different than tuning an arrow and tweaking with spine and stuff till you get perfect broadhead flight. You know, it's rewarding to go through the process and in the end of it, kill something.
Absolutely. Hey guys, if you've got another couple minutes, I'd like to talk about one other cartridge that I think is going to play a big part in the future of big game hunting across the country. Do you have a minute?
Yeah, I would love to hear about it.
Okay. Yeah. Now, we've mentioned it a couple times. It's a 6.5 Creedmoor. It's a smaller diameter projectile, obviously, in terms of inches. It's 0.264 on the decimal system. And it's got a funny background. It was designed as a long-range competitive cartridge for shooters that didn't want to hand load. And a pair of geniuses, Dave Emery at Hornady and Dennis DeMille, who is a world champion long-range shooter, put their heads together and designed this cartridge. And it's turned out to be an extremely well-balanced round with almost unprecedented levels of inherent accuracy. It's hard to find a rifle chambered in 6.5 Creedmoor that doesn't shoot well. And a shocking number of them shoot half MOA groups if you're rifleman enough to get, you know, to get that out of the rifle. At SHOT Show, almost a year ago now, so the 2016 SHOT Show, I did an informal poll of custom rifle manufacturers and the, you know, the big box rifle manufacturers on cartridges. And I asked all of them, what's your most popular cartridge today? In every single case, it was the 6.5 Creedmoor. The big box manufacturers were adding more new variations on all their bolt action lines than any other cartridge. And the custom guys, almost to a man, said they were building as many 6.5 Creedmoor rifles as all other cartridges combined, purely because of the high-performance nature of the cartridge. It's very low recoil. Almost all factory ammo is going to shoot through your gun really well. And because of the inherent aerodynamics of the 6.5-millimeter projectile, if you've got a good one that's built for distance, by the time it passes 300 or 400 yards, you're already carrying more energy, more velocity, and as much bullet weight as a 270. And it's a short action cartridge that burns less powder and recoils less. You get out to 600-700 yards and it's walking all over the 270, which I hate to say because I love the 270 cartridge, but the 270 is not an inherently aerodynamic diameter. I know that's kind of an odd concept, but it exists. And the 6.5 is. So the way I look at it is, I've said this before, I'll say it again. I think the 30-06 was the game-changing cartridge of the 20th century. It brought hunters and riflemen to a new way of looking at shooting. I believe that the 6.5 Creedmoor is the 30-06 of the 21st century. It's not as good on elk because it doesn't carry the bullet weight and have the frontal diameter, but it will take elk. And on deer, antelope, mule deer, whitetail deer, whatever, it's so incredibly good that, well, anyway, it's an amazing cartridge. I really do think it's going to be one of the major players for the next century.
So you wouldn't hesitate to hunt elk with it, or would you?
No, I wouldn't hesitate it. To hunt elk with it, although it wouldn't necessarily be my first choice. And it depends a little bit on the hunt. If we're talking something like a depredation cow elk hunt, in a heartbeat. Like I mentioned, my niece a few weeks ago shot a spike bull with a 6.5 Creedmoor, performed beautifully. I know that a good friend of mine, a legendary gun writer, Wayne Van Zwall, shot a 6-point bull with one right after it came out, I believe in excess of 600 yards. And he's not a guy that typically shoots long on big game, but he trusted that rifle well enough to do so. And it did fine. One shot, dead and down. That said, when you go from a 500 or maybe, yeah, about a 500-pound cow or spike bull up to an 800 or 900 pound mature rutted up bull, you kill him just fine with a 6.5 Creedmoor, but you're not going to notice any reaction when you shoot him, even if you put it right through the boiler room. He's going to run off and bugle and then tip over. But elk are like that. They kind of tend to ignore people shooting at them until they can't.
Until they don't know what hit them and they're down.
Yeah, man, it's amazing. I've seen big mature bulls take, three, four center hits and just shrug them off. And then suddenly they just tip over. But ounce for ounce, I don't think there's anything tougher than a big bull elk, or anything that ignores being shot like a big bull elk. Yeah. When I used to guide hunters, I would always tell them, look, I don't care how perfectly you placed your first shot. If he's still on all 4 feet, you put more into him. Keep shooting until he's down. And then stay on him, because I've seen bulls lost. I've got video of a big bull that got up and walked off after dropping in his tracks in the hunter. And I was actually there as a spectator. The hunter and his guide were both celebrating, talking on the radio, not even walking and watching. And that bull walked off.
My goodness.
Thankfully, I kind of wet my pants and yelled a bunch, and they turned around and shot him again.
Oh man. Well, Joseph, this has all been good. As I mentioned earlier, we so appreciate you taking the time and obviously sharing the knowledge with us. Is there any resources you would point our listeners to if they want to learn more, or any places that we can follow your work, follow your writing, anything like that that you would want to share with us?
Sure. As far as where I write, typically Peterson's Hunting, I've got a monthly column there called Open Country. And then I do one called Cartridge Corner. That's just a little third page column, and another one called Bullet Board that I'm particularly fond of. What we do different from everybody else there is every bullet that I feature in that column has been recovered from an animal. So it's not theoretical, shot into performance gelatin or whatever at a factory. It's real world stuff with an account of how the animal reacted and so forth. That's kind of fun. As far as really technical stuff on shooting, Shooting Times magazine, I'm the hunting editor for Shooting Times magazine, and do pretty much a feature or two per issue there. And then I do their vintage firearms column as well. I write for Rifle Shooter magazine and several others as well. But as far as purely gaining knowledge in hunting, I think just the one thing I could say to hunters, whether they're experienced or just beginning, is read a lot. TV is good, but there's a lot of, and it's great fun, it's inspiring, but there's a lot of hype and propaganda and so forth. Even spending time online researching can be great, but always take what you read there with a grain of salt, because anything posted online, and I do online work. You know, I'm not ragging on online guys, but anybody can post online. Whereas when you read something in a printed magazine, you know that it's been through several sets of eyes, and hopefully some astute editor has caught wayward writers if they say something stupid. I know good editors have saved my hindquarters more than once. So you can trust print magazines and so forth. But read, study, you know, even good classic magazines like Field and Stream and Outdoor Life and so forth are great resources. And the books of the old greats like Jack O'Connor and so forth, just wonderful stuff. Hemingway wrote wonderfully about hunting Africa and bullet performance and so forth. He had some interesting concepts, but it's fun reading. Robert Rourke is another one to read. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, once Very again, cool. Joseph, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. It was fun. I enjoyed it.
Well, thank you for listening to the Hunt Backcountry podcast. To access the show notes for this episode and subscribe to future episodes, please visit exomountaingear.com/podcast. Also, as we mentioned, we totally value your feedback and would love to hear about any questions, topic suggestions, or comments you have. Our email address is podcast@exomountaingear.com. If you're enjoying the show, please leave us a review in iTunes. By doing so, you will be entered into our next Exo Mountain Gear swag giveaway. We are looking forward to the next episode and hope you are as well. The topic is going to be bullet and projectile selection with Mason Payer from Nosler. Continuing this Building a Backcountry Rifle series, it's going to be a good one. We will catch you guys next week.